What's up, everybody? Welcome into another episode of the Celtics Talk Podcast. Chris Gasper here from the Boston Globe. And Gasper, I got to tell you, I'm a little uncomfortable. I don't know what to do with my hands because this is the first time I think I have done an in-person pod in like maybe 2 years.
Wow. Wow. Well, I am honored to be the first person you will do an in-person pod with in 2 years. You know, the good news is it feels like not all that much has changed with the Celtics in 2 years. Right? Kind of feels the same.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's probably less. We'll say less than ideal.
So I want to start there. One quarter of the way through the NBA season, how are you feeling about the Boston Celtics?
Frustrated.
Ooh.
I'm frustrated with the Celtics because I feel like, again, they're sort of on a treadmill here. And I went back and looked this up, Forsby. If you go back and look at last season, obviously 36-36, then you add in the play-in game.
Ooh.
And what happened with the Brooklyn Nets and being 11-10 to this point in the season, over their last 99 games,
oh,
and Wednesday night against the Sixers will be the 100th, over the last 99 games, they're 49-50. And that's kind of what I feel like they are. Like, I know they're 11-10. I feel like they're a 500-ish team, not a contending team. And I find that to be frustrating. And I feel like that's a large enough sample size now where I look at it and say, okay, you changed the coach. Mm-hmm. And you changed some of the complementary pieces and brought in good players like Josh Richardson and Dennis Schroeder. But you're still sort of getting the same results. Maybe you need to change the mix here, like really change the mix with the big three.
Wow, I didn't know we were going right to pessimismville. But
sorry,
no, that's okay. I've lived there. I've been there. I mean, I've been on air for 100 probably games now, and I've come on, and like one night it's like, well, okay, you know, they one step forward, and then the next night they blow a 19-point lead, and it is maddening to watch. So let's start there then. What do they do? Like, do they? Are we at the point yet? I wish I brought my panic meter from the are we slamming panic buttons and saying that if this doesn't improve and if you look at the December schedule, there's little reason to believe it's going to be easy for this team to accelerate forward. What is the next step for them to figure this out?
Well, I mean, I think the next step for me would be, again, changing the composition of the team. However, what I'm going to propose cannot happen until January 25th.
Oh, no.
So for me, I don't want to give up on Tatum and Brown.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the easiest thing to do, and I'm not putting all the blame on this guy, but the easiest thing to do would be to move on from Marcus Smart and see if you can get more out of Tatum and Brown. But as you know better than I do, because he signed that extension, he's not eligible to be traded until January 25th. So I would say that buys them some time to try and figure this out. But I look at them a little bit now, Chris, like the 2012 Red Sox, in that they look at it and they say, okay, there's something here that didn't work. The message maybe from the manager or the coach isn't working. So we're just going to change the coach. We're going to change the messenger and hope to get a different result with the talent. The real problem isn't going back to the Red Sox, you know, the chicken and beer Red Sox. It's not Carl Crawford or Adrian Gonzalez or Josh Beckett that the mix isn't right, even though the talent on paper is great. It's that we don't have the right leader. I kind of feel like the Celtics are going into that territory here,
ooh,
having gone from Brad Stevens to Ime Udoka and still getting a lot of the same results and hearing a lot of the same complaints on a night-to-night basis from Ime.
Yeah, so I can't disagree with anything you're saying. Like, I think it's perfectly reasonable. But when people say to me, you know, okay, so what do they do? I'm like, I don't know. Cross your fingers that Rob Williams stays healthy. But yeah, like, certainly the bridge they have to cross, and so maybe it's a little easier depending on what happens in December. Okay, they struggle against all these 500 and better teams that they're about to play. Maybe you're okay, you're going into the trade deadline. It's a little bit easier now to stomach having to move on. But, you know, I think people think about that and they think, well, they'll move Dennis Schroeder because he's only on a one-year deal and there's no path to retaining him. Josh Richardson maybe will be enticing to a competitive team, a contending team. But is that enough, and does that set you up any better for the future? Now, Brad Stevens will hold on to this idea that eventually they will have another star, and you know whether that will be a $20 million guy in free agency or making a big splash trade, which is probably the more likely route. Then you know maybe you can cling to that, but you know I just don't know if that's enough to change anything. Like as you said, because the composition is still, the core is still the same, and there's something that just isn't working here, and I can't put my finger on what it is. And I don't want to, because like Marcus Smart has been really good. Let's start there.
Okay.
As we start to dissect, what have you thought of the Marcus Smart experience this year?
I've been you know, I would say underwhelmed. Statistically, it's good, but I had higher expectations maybe for him as the starting point guard. And I go back to that Chicago game when he made the comments he made. Not totally
not
wrong.
Not a great spot. Not a great spot.
Not totally wrong, but I feel like wrong time, wrong way, wrong guy for that night. What do you have, one assist in that game?
Zero
assists in that game. Sorry, I was giving him an assist. So I just feel like, that's not right. And I also, I look at it, and this isn't Marcus Smart's fault, but, you know, he was the number six pick in the draft. He's the longest tenured Celtic. The number six pick in the draft doesn't expect to be a role player. That's what he is. The longest tenured Celtic sort of feels like, I've been around here the longest. I'm due a certain degree of deference. Marcus Smart on a team with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown is not due a certain degree of deference. So I just feel like the role he has to play in this team and the role he ultimately has to play in the chemistry is not one he's well-suited to or willing to accept. And that's different from what he's giving you statistically, which is good.
So I think he's been better since calling him out. I think there was – I would love to know, and we'll hear this eventually after the season, probably not until then, but we'll find out more about exactly if that meeting did anything. Because I do think that he probably went in and, you know, they sat down as a players-only meeting.
Oh, yeah,
you know,
he went in all right.
Passed the bread. hey, you know, you guys need to be better in the fourth quarter. And I'm pretty sure Jason and Jaylen looked at each other and went, you know who needs to be better in the fourth quarter? Marcus Smart. And you know who needs to take less shots in all four quarters? Marcus Smart. And I'm sure there was a – good give and take between everybody involved there, because Marcus has been far more disciplined ever since. Now, he had some boneheaded moments. The play in Dallas is unforgivable. He's had other instances where his defense hasn't been as good.
I didn't like him barking at the officials. Everyone was doing it. It wasn't just him. But I didn't like him barking at the officials against Brooklyn and pushing Grant Williams away. Well, I thought that was kind of a bad look. I mean, it wasn't the worst thing he's ever done, but I didn't like that.
Yeah, no, and that's absolutely fair. He still has those moments. But I do think, in the grand scheme of things, he has throttled down his shot attempts. He has driven more at the basket. I love that Dennis Schroeder has sort of rubbed off on everybody on this team and like, hey, we don't have to take threes every time. We can go to the basket sometimes. You guys know, like, this is new rule in the NBA. You can just drive. It's amazing. and I do like that. But I do want, like, look, end of the day, coming into the season, Brad Stevens said it on our air. Michael Hawley asked him, is this the mix, this the right group moving forward? He's like, we'll see. Like, they don't know. I think they were hopeful that what Marcus stands for and the defensive intensity that he brings, especially going under a defensive-minded coach, would help this team find an identity. And I do think they found something there. But ultimately, it comes down to the offense, too. Like, it just offense hasn't been good. And how much of that is on Marcus to be a playmaker? How much do the Jays, with their own limited ability to playmake, be able to need someone like that who can facilitate? And so that's what they've got to find out. And I think this stretch will tell us a lot more. I think, like, I want to make overreactions after 20 games. And as you said, it's not really 20 games. It's 100 games.
Yeah, so I'm 99 going on 100.
But... you know, I guess I just need to see it a little bit more. And I think, again, I think it's just easier to pull that plug if you get to the end of December, you're a 500 team, and Brad Stevens says, well, look, we're not going to just go and be the playing team anymore. We need to start thinking about the future. Let's get some assets. Let's figure out what guy we're going after. Is it Bradley Beal? Is it whoever? Who is out there? Who is disgruntled at the trade deadline that maybe you could make a play for? But, yeah, it's weird to be sitting here, and I do think there was a little bit of hope that a new coach would change everything. Let's go this direction. We've been very pessimistic, but
sure,
we're going to get back to it. Don't worry.
Yeah.
What gives you hope? What gives you the most hope based on what you've seen these 20 games that this team could turn a corner potentially this season?
The most hope, I would say a couple of things. Your guy, Rob Williams, I like what I've seen from him. I know it's about staying healthy. Also, Jason Tatum, I feel like he gets off to some slow starts. He kind of did this last year, and you look up in February and March, and he's like one of the five best players in the league, so I'm not going to write him off. I know it's been a rough stretch, particularly the last three games. It's been ghastly. 19% from three? Are you kidding me? But before that, you know, the other three games, it was more than 30 points per game, so he gets off to these slow starts. I'm not panicked about that. I think if Jaylen Brown's fully healthy, even the beginning of the year, you think it's back to the season opener against the Knicks. What, he dropped 46?
Yep.
And I see some more growth in his game. I just feel like a team that has some of the pieces they have, and this is why I said frustrated when you asked me how I'm feeling about the season, I feel like they should be better than their record is, and I feel like they have the pieces to be a better team and a team that can contend.
Yeah, and I ultimately that's what I come back to is I keep joking. You know, I was talking with Tom Curran. I said, what's it like to cover a good team? You know, like, because the Patriots are – but the difference is the Patriots are so far exceeding – what we thought was going to be the potential for this year. Maybe, I don't know. I don't know what your predictions were. But, you know, it's been this joy of, oh, my God, like, Mac Jones steps in, and it's fun to watch, and they do good things, and the defense is great. And the Celtics were, okay, new coach, but, you know, maybe that gets them back to contender status, and now they're middling 500 team, and there's frustrations there that, you know, they have the potential to be so much better. I do think, ultimately, end of the day, what gives me optimism is the starting five hasn't played a lot, six games. I think it's only 70 minutes of total floor time. I do think that there's potential there. As bad as the offense has been, healthy Rob changes a whole lot of everything. You know how I feel about that.
Absolutely.
You know, Jason Jalen and just having Al and Smart, and like just the right mix and getting to develop that continuity could help. Some pieces even just moving to the bench. Like Richardson has exceeded my expectations.
He's been very, very, very good, especially shooting the three, which was something that had sort of fallen off for him the last couple of years.
So he's only at 34%. I'm not ready to say that Josh Richardson has figured out the three. But
I've been impressed with
his mid-range has been phenomenal. He's shooting, I did some number on it today, 54% from mid-range.
Wow.
And even though analytics nerds like me hate that shot, it's working. And ultimately, beggars can't be choosers. The Celtics need offense. It's like, okay, Josh Richardson, that shot works. You do it. Dennis Schroeder, you can drive. Do it. Like, these things I'm fine with.
So that brings me to my next question I had for you. You mentioned that. So when I watch the team, one thing that I look at and say, there's not enough shooting. And I guess as someone who covers the team on a regular basis, my question to you would be, where does that shooting come from? And also, what's happened to Peyton Pritchard? He's like buried.
So, well, first off, and it was actually last on my list of things to get to, but we'll accelerate to this.
Okay.
We were both Team Neesmith, right, coming
yes.
into the season.
Yes.
And
yes.
I'll admit, I am conflicted. As much as I like what Josh Richardson is giving them, I also know that there's no long-term path to Josh Richardson being a part of this core, whereas there is a path for Aaron Neesmith to be a key member of this team. And it is frustrating a little bit that if you're going to struggle, why not at least let him to learn even if he makes mistakes. And I get it. Ime Udoka comes in and he's like, I got to win. You know, every new coach feels pressure. You can say it all you want, but even if you're on a rebuilding team, there's a pressure to be like, get this thing right. And especially for him. And so I understand why he's leaning on the veterans. But I also think if you get to the end of the year and you're 500 and you're the 13th pick in the lottery and you're like, man, I really wish we had developed Aaron Neesmith for next season because he has no trade value. I mean, it's limited trade value, which could be higher if he played, and you just don't know if he's part of your core. So I do hope they find some balance, even if it's 7 minutes a game, 8 minutes a game, just to get a picture of what he's doing. And I do worry in the case of Peyton Pritchard, I just think his confidence is shattered. You know, like for whatever reason, he came in, and I don't know if it was the Pro-Am where he scored 90-something points and he was just like feeling a little too good about himself or whatnot, but then opportunity dried up, and now he's left kind of searching, and I think he's pressing, and, you know, I don't know how he gets out of that short of going to the G League. You know?
Oh, wow. You think
so? I mean, I don't know. Like, yeah. What else do you do?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just surprised. Look, again, I felt, you know, I know you made a Patriots parallel, and I don't want to make this full parallel, but I'll just say sometimes Boston sports fans overreact to small sample sizes. Mm-hmm. We have a relatively small sample size for Mac Jones. It's been very good. I can say, doing the Sports Hub Celtics show on 98.5, that at this time last year, we were fielding calls comparing Peyton Pritchard to Steve Nash. And I was like, whoa, slow your roll a little bit. He might be a little close. He might be like, you know, Steve Blake plus plus. And now it's like, you just settle for Steve Blake.
Right, right. Yeah, that's so
But bad. I still think he has a place in the team because he gives them shooting. I think they need more shooting around the Jays.
Yeah.
And as much as I like what you're getting from Dennis Schroeder, and I know you've mentioned this, it's the best value contract in the league, and, you know, Marcus Smart has given you what Marcus Smart gives you.
Right.
I just look at it and say, okay, as part of the struggle sometimes for Tatum and Brown, the fact that other teams aren't really afraid of the shooting
100%.
That's around them.
And it's the age-old question, and that's why I think that there's just this is the problem with middling teams. You just don't know. Like, when do you go to the rookies? You don't know, like, when to just be okay with the reboot. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if Ime will find that. I don't know if Brad will find that. It's just a matter of, you know, that's why this next month. I think it's easy to look up for us at 20 games and say, this is what they should do. I think when you're in it, it gets a little bit more difficult. Like, there's always this hope of, well, when we get healthy, even though this team is never healthy, you know, this could happen. And if this guy plays this way, you know, maybe this happens. And so, but I do think that more than anything, they just need to figure this out. And whether Neesmith and Pritchard are complementary pieces or actually just trade bait, they need to play. And so I don't know how they do that moving forward because there are veterans that are playing better than them right now. But some of that's could sort it out. Again, it's easy to gut this roster if you're 20 and 21 on January 1st or whatever. 34 games they'll be at January 2nd. We'll know a lot more based on where they stand.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You mentioned Jason and Jalen. I mean, I can't believe it took this long to get to the superstars. But what have you thought of Tatum, especially the other night, 10 assists, 5 in the fourth quarter? Did this slump poke him in a direction to maybe embrace this a little bit more, or is this just we're noticing it more because his shot isn't falling?
You know, I don't know. I need to see more than that one game against Toronto to say it's pushing him in that direction. I like the fact that he had 10 assists. I mean, I think that's good, and I know that's something that helps the team. Ultimately, it's a balancing act, and it's one of the toughest things I think to learn as a young player is, you know, when is it my time to take over? When do I have to get the other guys involved? It's a balancing act. That's why I feel like ideally, and I know there's really only one of this guy, but if they could have like a Chris Paul type veteran point guard, yeah. I think that would be perfect. Like, look what Chris Paul has done for Phoenix, and look what he's done for Devin Booker.
Right.
That would help them so much. So I think Tatum is trying. My frustration, I think, with Tatum, and I'm trying to temper it, is because I did go back and look at some of the stuff from last year, is that I feel like he ends the season on such a high, and you're like, oh, my God, this is great. He made so much progress. And then he comes back the next year, and you feel like it's like starting from scratch. You know, and so I don't want to overreact because I feel like by the time we get to late January and February, he's going to be playing really well in all these facets, and you're going to see some of the playmaking that you saw last year. Yeah. I thought his playmaking last year took a real step forward.
It did, and it's undeniable that when you have Evan Fournier and even Kemba Walker, which is a crazy story that he's out of the rotation now in New York, I mean, not unexpected based on the way we saw him play, but it does make it easier when you kick into those guys versus Peyton Pritchard having no confidence or, you know, even Josh Richardson shooting 34%. So I think some of that's there. I do think what I saw the other night was that the Celtics force-fed him. What I liked about that fourth quarter of Toronto game is Ime sort of said, doesn't have it going, but we're just going to live with it. We're going to, like, he's going to get 7 shots. He's going to make 6 of them, but he's going to facilitate. Everything's going to start with Jason Tatum. And I think they need to get him into that mode where, like, the offense starts with him. He's the one drawing attention, making a kick. I'd like to see him run more pick and rolls. It was, like, bizarre. Enes Kanter's out there finally, and we're seeing pick and rolls. And I'm like, Celtics remembered they can run pick and rolls and drive. I mean, I feel like I'm slandering Ime here. But, like, it's sometimes they get so far away from this stuff that, you know, it's nice to see them pull back. But it is, like, slightly weird to be like, when he started slow, I said he's gonna get it going. And then he did. He had that 4-game stretch.
Yeah.
I was like, all right. He's turned the corner. This is when he goes. This is when he goes to another level. And all of a sudden, here come the 50-point games. And then he went backwards. And now it's 4 games where he hasn't shot the ball well. And I don't know what to. I don't know. Did he get too jacked this offseason? Did Drew Hanlon have him lifting too many weights? Did he get in love with the Instagram bicep curls? I don't know. But it's weird. Like, his 3-pointer is just off.
Yeah, no, you're right. His shot has definitely been off a little bit. But I think he tends to go through some of these stretches time to time. And I think he also sometimes gets off to these slow starts. I'm going to be more concerned about it, like I said, if we get to the new year and it's like late January, early February, and he's still up and down.
Yeah. All right. You got to go do early edition. So I'm going to cut you out of here, and then I'm just going to scream at the camera for a few minutes. What happens? What happens in the next 30-something, 45 days, up until, so it's January 17th, I think, is the smart date.
Okay.
What happens between now? What do they survive December, and what happens in January?
Oh, that's a good question. I think they sort of tread water in December, and then we get to January, and they sort of make a little bit of a move where they establish themselves as a playoff team. You know, they're not like on the fringes of it, like now, sort of staring at the plate.
Do you think that will be a buyer in January?
Well, no. I think they're going to have to make a choice in terms of, are you okay being, let's say, 5 or 6? Mm-hmm. Is that good enough and you feel like you're on an upward trend?
Right.
Or do you look at your team and say, this composition isn't good enough to win a championship? I don't want to use the term blow it up, but we have to make a significant move, which to me would be, you know, moving on from Smart or some other like high rotation, you know, your guy, God forbid, they trade Rob Williams.
Please, there's no padding behind me.
I know. But something like that, you know, and I think that's ultimately, and it's interesting to see Brad have to make that decision really as a first-time, first-year team builder.
Yeah.
You know, that's a tough spot to be in because I think sometimes you can look at something and it can be good, but is it good enough and does it have the capability to be great?
And that's the decision. And so what I'm optimistic about is that Brad showed a little, like, not ruthlessness, but a little bit of, hey, if I got to make a tough move, I'll make it, when he traded Kemba. And that's worked out really well for the Celtics, even though I think Al's coming back to earth a little bit. And I'd like them to make some shots, but that goes for the entire Celtics roster. But I do think if Brad gets to January and he's just like, you know, we're just not in it, I do think he has the ability and the fortitude to maybe make that a decision that is hard for a GM to embrace, that Danny struggled with at times, where you're just always thinking that it's going to get better. But we'll see. December's going to tell us a lot.
Yeah, I think you know, yeah, you're right. And whatever that date is with Smart, I've seen the 25th, it could be the 17th, whatever it is. I think like that really is sort of a crossing the Rubicon point for them. Where are you at that point? Because you're right about December. The schedule's really tough, and you can convince yourself, okay, we're like, okay, we survived that. You know, we didn't sink our whole season. Mm-hmm. Now can we turn it on a little in January? And you might get to the end of it and be like, okay, we're in a good spot. But are we an actual contender when you look at some of the other teams in the East? I just don't feel – like this season, I feel like they're right now at least further away from the top of the East. They've gotten further away than they were last year and they were the year before that.
Yeah. All right. That was a very optimistic podcast. So you need to go talk football about a good team. So Chris Casper, thank you for joining us. All right, Casper with a little dose of reality there. I can't say I disagree with what he's saying. It is a unique spot that the Boston Celtics are in right now in terms of trying to plot the path forward. And I think we knew coming into the year that there was a chance that this was sort of an exploratory, figuring out how all the pieces work and is Marcus Smart the right point guard? How does Rob Williams hold up over the course of a year? And, how do all of these pieces work together? But December is going to be crazy, and it starts Wednesday night with the Sixers and a team that, you know, hasn't been playing well, but Embiid's back from COVID and they're going to get tested, and it's another team in the East that they're going to have to go through if they accomplish anything this season. I think when you start looking at it, they get blown out by Brooklyn. They have to go to overtime to beat a Milwaukee team that didn't have Chris Middleton, Giannis, and Brooke Lopez. And so you start just wondering, is that a factor of the Celtics and sort of trying to find their way early in the season, or is that indicative of what this team is? And when Gasper puts it out there, you know, 100-game sample, it's not like it's just related to the first 20 games of this season. I will try to be a little bit positive to finish up here. I did want to give the bench a little bit of some love, because as the Celtics start to get healthier, there's a chance that unit, which hasn't been great this season, could go up a little bit of a level. Now you've had Grant Williams filling in as a spot starter, Schroeder's filled in when Jalen and Rob have been out, you know, even Enes Kanter getting more burn with the availability of minutes. And I'm wondering what that bench will look like, especially as, you know, Ime gets to pick from a full complement of players who he wants to toss out there. You know, Richardson, again, there's this balance. I think his defense has been great. I think if you have Josh Richardson in San Antonio and you're able to defend DeJounte Murray and Derek White down the stretch, maybe there's a chance you win that game instead of watching Schroeder struggle to hose those guys off as they got hot. So we'll see. And Grant Williams getting to shuffle to that bench role. You know, can he keep up the 50-40-90 shooting? Romeo Langford has played some inspired defense the entire season. And really, I hope they continue to find minutes for him in that early bench role, because if the identity of this team is going to be defense, you need defensive-minded players even when Marcus Smart isn't out there. And so getting to be able to have someone like Romeo and Richardson out there to offset what you lose when Schroeder's on the floor, that can only help. And then Enes Freedom, it's still weird to say, but with the legal name change now, he's actually been really good on both ends of the floor, really. I mean, from offensive rebounds and his normal duties there to controlling the glass on the defensive end. And if you look at his defensive numbers as the league's tracking, now some of that's skewed because he loses a guy and, you know, maybe the defender gets tagged by the guy coming over with help, but Enes was holding guys to something like 36.8% field goal percentage in his limited play this season. That number was at 48.8 a couple years ago when he was first time around. So he's having a positive impact on this team when he's out there. And they just, that's what they need. They need guys that, for a second unit, that at least has to tread water and give the starters a chance to come back and win these games. And the starters have been really good, and I'm intrigued to see what that starting five is capable of if they can play more than a game or two without having that continuity busted. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see if everybody is actually able to get out there. Celtics only think listing Jaylen Brown is questionable as he sort of ramps back up, dealing with that hamstring and coming off that injury. But Rob Williams is supposedly healthy and able to get back out there. We'll get a better idea of what these Celtics look like as whole. The schedule doesn't ease up after Philadelphia. It's like a pit stop at home after coming back from that three-game road trip. Now the Celtics head right back out on a five-game West Coast trip that starts in with Utah and Portland, but then really accelerates with the two L.A. teams and Phoenix to close it out. So the Celtics are going to be tested here, and we're going to get a better gauge of where exactly they stand in the landscape of the league. And I think I keep saying it. I think we'll look up on January 1st or January 2nd and have a better idea of where this goes from here. Maybe we'll be a little bit more optimistic than we were today. Or maybe, you know, Brad Stevens has to make the tough decisions about what's ahead. One easy decision, liking and subscribing the Celtics Talk podcast. If you're listening to the audio version, I hope you go check out the YouTube version. Chris Gasper got all dressed up to come into our TV studio, and we actually get to hang out together. So thank you for those that check us out on YouTube. Like I said, like, subscribe. We'll catch you next time on the Celtics Talk podcast.